Es un asunto en el que la sociedad civil siempre ha jugado un papel fundamental.
La sociedad civil.
Zivilgesellschaft.
Civil society.
The Grassroots View, an EESC podcast.
Welcome to another edition of The Grassroots View, the podcast from the European Economic and Social Committee. This week, we're focusing on reforms to the EU's economic governance framework, aimed at ensuring member states manage their public finances in a sound and sustainable way. In February, the European Council and Parliament agreed on the Commission's proposal for the most ambitious reforms since the financial crisis: new fiscal rules to encourage debt reduction, structural reforms and strategic investments, all designed to improve Europe's economic resilience at a time of rising geopolitical challenge. Two former Italian leaders are also proposing radical changes to Europe's industrial policy and the single market. So how much consensus is there on economic governance among EU members? What hard choices need to be made? And what will the public make of it all in this crucial election year? Joining me to discuss all this are four key experts: Luca Jaye, former president of the European Economic and Social Committee; Margarita Marques, a Portuguese member of the European Parliament; Maria Tadeo, a European news correspondent; and Maria de Mertzis from Bruegel Think Tank.
The Grassroots View, an EESC podcast.
To set the scene, Luca Jaye, former president of the European Economic and Social Committee and current president of the European Semester. Luca, tell us about the options for economic reform once the suspension of budgetary rules came to an end last year, rules temporarily lifted to help governments manage COVID and the effects of the Ukraine war.
So there were two scenarios. The first scenario was simply to go back to the old rules that were completely outdated, already not working even before the pandemic, because the idea to reform was already there at the beginning of this legislation, or to take a reform. And the idea of reform was absolutely there after, of course, the pandemic has created a postponing of the working on this. And so there was a need to reform. And the need to reform was not only to adapt the model of the economic governance to the new situation, but also to pave the way for the future. So it was absolutely a necessity. But you know, for the moment, there are two different things, even three. The first one is that the reform of the fiscal rules is a reform proposed, negotiated, agreed, and finally to be ratified and to enter into force. It is not the entire picture, of course. It's a part of the entire scheme. Secondly, the EU institution have tasked these two past Italian Prime Minister, Enrico Letta and Mario Draghi, to prepare two different reports. And now we have the first one by Enrico Letta presented to the institution, to the Council, the first debate, and was concentrated on the internal market that has been a driver of growth and prosperity for Europe, but is still very much incomplete already per se. And the new situation where we are, of this global confrontation and global changing in geopolitics and geoeconomics, make more urgent to go much more further in completing the internal market. In the energy sector, the energy union should be done. In the digital market, we are still too much divided, but also in the capital market, because the capital market union was already a dossier on the agenda since 10 years. It was part of the five-president plan during Juncker time and is still very much open. So if we want to cope with the challenge, to face the needed investment, the needed infrastructure of Europe, for Europe to be capable to continue to be a key player in this changing and disruptive world, we need to go further and to really complete the internal market and adapt to the new scenario.
Thanks, Luca. So last year, the Commission proposed a new economic governance framework based on the views of the public and international financial institutions. The Council approved the proposals in principle and opened negotiations with the Parliament. Margarita Marques, MEP for the Progressive Alliance of Socialists and Democrats, was a key negotiator. Margarita, tell us how the Parliament responded.
Our position on the Council agreement was very critical. It means we couldn't accept the agreement reached in the Council. And we start to discuss with the Council, to negotiate with the Council our position, because we had our mandate. And at the end, we can say that the European Parliament could play an important role, giving more flexibility to the current framework. It means that the framework that is adopted now is more flexible, gives to member states capacity to invest, gives to member states more time for the adjustment, gives more ownership to the member states. It means the Commission, before to propose the trajectory, must hear the member state before. So, and finally, we could also have something that it was a dream a long time ago. It means not be considered in the next expenditure, the co-financing of the EU funds. So why now? Because only now we could agree and we could vote in the different institutions. But what I can say is that it was a lot. We had a lot of discussion, negotiations, and I think that we can have now a very interesting instrument and economic governance framework that could answer to citizen expectations, investment on a climate transition, digital transition, European pillar of social rights and defense. So I need, normally I say it's not my dream, but it's in my view a good proposal.
So what do the analysts make of the reforms and whether they meet the critical needs of this era of polycrises and sharpened geopolitical competition? Maria de Mertsis, senior fellow at the Brussels-based economic think tank Bruegel, what's your view? Are these new rules fit for purpose?
And the first thing I'll say is that it is important to have fiscal rules. We are talking about the semester here, which is part of the cyclical policy that Europe monitors across all countries, right? And in the pandemic crisis, we have had to lift those rules because countries needed to deal with a big shock, and therefore they had to have the freedom to choose how to do that. But as a European Union with a single currency, we need some sort of a fiscal coordination, because as we saw in the financial crisis, even fiscal problems of small countries can really migrate to other countries and cause problems for the Eurozone and for the EU as a whole. So we need those rules, and it's important to come back to these rules. Now, my overwhelming sense of the new fiscal framework is that it is a better fiscal framework to the previous one that we had, in the sense that it pays more attention to countries' needs, because that's important. But it hasn't gone far enough in terms of understanding the investment needs that we have. That is really my overwhelming thought about this, meaning that the investment needs that we have to cover, either at the country level or at the European level, still need to look for sources of money. And those rules haven't really allowed the flexibility that we need to invest in some of the big challenges. Think of climate being the most important one, or, you know, defense being another one. So there, I think there will be issues. There will be inconsistencies that will come back to Brussels as countries struggle to meet those challenges. And Brussels, you know, the coordinator of all this, telling them, oh, no, you can't do this because you will be violating some sort of rules. There will be discussions of that sort. How we solve them will be crucial for meeting the investment needs of the future.
Turning now to Maria Tadeo, European correspondent, what kind of fundamental questions do you see these issues posing for policymakers?
To me, what is interesting, though, is that there really has been a realization, especially in the past year, that we're returning to some extent to a world where you see real competition between global geopolitical powers and global powers. And there is certainly this anxiety in the EU that they would could be left behind, and how to leverage all of the instruments. And let's not forget, the European Union sits on an immense money maker that is the single market. But I think there has been, in the past year particularly, because of the many crises that we've seen repeatedly playing out, from the energy crisis, which obviously had a massive cost on Europe compared to the US, the war in Ukraine, all of this is hitting home, this anxiety to kind of go, okay, how do we stay relevant and how do we stay powerful? At the same time, obviously, they insist that it is made in Europe and there is a kind of European ethos that will have to feature into all these questions. And you hear this even in the words of the head of the European Central Bank, Madame Lagarde, where she says, when you look at the economies, you should not compare them. When you look at the nature of inflation, you should not compare them. And we're not dependent on anyone else. We have to be dependent on ourselves. But again, this goes back to the first question that we attended to in our chat, which is, then how do you go about this? And it brings up again, fundamentally, the question of the European budget, the question of potential new instruments, obviously, to get money in markets, or then figure out a way in which the instruments that you have carry some level of flexibility so that you stay competitive. But I think at this point, there's no real answer, but this is the biggest debate for sure in the European Union as it stands.
How we're moving forward in terms of the outlook and the context that you ask is a Europe that is needing to rethink how to place itself in an economy that it is, in a global economy that is very fragmented. Therefore, you know, we cannot rely anymore on foreign markets to buy our products as reliably as we could in the past 20, 30 years. So what do we do instead? How do we promote our internal demand and sustain that? And then the other thing, which in my view is very crucial, is how does Europe find the scale and in different contexts, the scale to deal with powers that are wanting to dictate the terms of how economic relations should be happening in ways that Europe doesn't really agree with. But in order to be able to have a credible voice, it needs to find one voice and therefore a big voice.
Luca and Margherita, do you agree that Europe must have a more ambitious vision if it really wants to compete with the US and China?
Europe need, in the year to come, at least as a minimum, from 500 to 800 billion further investment per year for the next 10 years. That means one next generation EU per year. So the demand of investment that Europe need of spending for the already established priority that are in the field of the greening and all this changing of our economy on the digital and the energy, and now we add defense and we'll add the enlargement to 10 countries if we want to keep our promises to the Balkans, Ukraine, Moldova and Georgia, will represent a need to finally take stock and take responsibility of the political priority we put on the table and the need of financing.
I think that we need to look to the competition rules. This is very important because one time more, we need a balance between not block but promote competitiveness in Europe regarding to the other geographic areas and the other blocks, but at the same time to maintain the level playing field in the internal market. So this is, in my view, also a key element on this debate. Another very important debate is, where do we want to have the debt? At EU level, at national level. My position is that we need, after Next Generation EU, it means after 2026, we need to create a permanent EU mechanism for investment. And this is a key element to promote investment, because, as you said, we have the rules. Okay, we have the rules. Member states have room of maneuver to invest, but they need to have money to invest. So it means if you want to have no fragmentation between member states, we need to have this capacity created by Next Generation EU as a permanent mechanism and not only one time like Next Generation EU was.
Maria, where do you see the debate on European strategic autonomy and de-risking as regards critical resources? and the development of a European industrial policy.
Diversification as a concept is absolutely essential. And this is, we need to do that. You know, the energy crisis has taught us a very important lesson. And of course, now as we move away from this and we diversify, you know, we create dependencies elsewhere. They need to be weaker and they need to be more reliable. But, you know, you can see, even particularly in the critical raw materials, we are creating dependencies. But even on things like gas, we are importing a lot of our gas now, particularly in the liquid form from the U.S., if we have an next administration in the U.S. that is not what we want it to be, that could be quite uncomfortable and actually lead us into interesting discussions in negotiating. So, you know, it's important to move away from dependencies, but it's not so easy to do it quickly and or indeed to do it all the time. You just need to be aware of it and try and manage it as much as possible. The truth is that we see industrial policy being used across the world, and therefore, even just as a reaction, the EU is going to have to follow suit. And then the question is, how do you do that? How do you do it in a way that you basically do something good and minimize the bad things about it, meaning that the risks that you're taking, that you're going to favor some more than what is merited. One of the biggest criteria when you do this, in my view, is if you are sure that those that you're picking will produce effects that are to the benefit of the consumer. You know? And here I see really anything on the green agenda being the best candidate for this.
And finally, bearing in mind it's a critical election year, what are the prospects for consensus on these economic challenges? And where do you all see the key divisions between member states, between political blocs, and with citizens themselves? Margarita Marques, start us off.
I know that this is not the most easy and popular subject. I remember that Jacques Delors, when he was president of the Commission, he said one time to discuss the EU budget is not sexy. And it's the case, it's not a sexy debate, but this is very important for the future of the life of citizens. And when we look what happened in Europe with the EU answer to financial crisis 2010, 2011, I think that this is a big improvement and we have good arguments to explain the difference. Of course, as you know, there are always some difficulties and the separation or the complexity is not only between political families, but North Europe countries and South Europe countries. So there are always difficulties to find the balance. Of course, what was important in my view was to give capacity to investment and to avoid austerity policies. And I think that we could do it because member states now can't say that they develop, they decide austerity policies because EU rules. So it's clear that they have room of maneuver to have good economic and social decisions. Of course, we know that that right-wing parties normally they try to justify the austerity policies by European Union, and it's not the case. What I can feel speaking with colleagues, for example, from Finland or from Greece or from Spain or from Portugal, I think that, or from Sweden, both sides. So I think that we could find a balance. A balance means credibility and sustainable investment, both together. So this is the main points that where I think that we could find an agreement.
These are the standard divides, the North, South, the frugals, depending on how you want to define them for a number of reasons. First of all, there is a number of countries have got huge amounts of debt, which means that, you know, there isn't really much space for them to go beyond what already is planned. So that's one thing. The other thing is that some of the rules, and here I'm looking at Germany, Germany has got very strict rules in terms of how they use their fiscal instrument, namely debt, which actually constrains them. They don't have the freedom to deviate or as much freedom to deviate from very strict rules say. And this is going to be the perennial discussion in Europe of how much we are allowed to spend. So nothing new there. The only thing that can concentrate the mind is the urgency of the issues. Well, I mean, as we see climate change, as we see our summers getting hotter, or our winters getting hotter, natural catastrophes as a result of floods or these types of issues, this is the only thing that I think will concentrate the mind on doing something different than the way that we do today.
I think this is going to be a very political election for sure. Some of the fundamental questions are incredibly transcendental for the European Union. There's a question of defense too. But I think for me, it's not clear yet that there is a consensus in terms of how to go about this. We recently saw European leaders really struggling to come up with a form of conclusion to an economic summit, which again, tackled very basic questions, not some of the great questions. I think in terms of the consensus, it is very difficult to build, but there will be an early indication in terms of the composition and the makeup of the commission. But you know, it is always difficult when you have to set policy at 27. But again, maybe these results, the European elections, the reports that are coming out, kind of the zeitgeist, that will create or infuse news momentum. I think you would think, in theory, that's what it should do. A news cycle usually instills new energy when it comes to these questions.
The problem that it is, the most important one, is that it isn't that we don't know what we need to do. We know what we need to do. The question is, do we want to? And that do we want to is really the political constraints. And that is a perennial discussion in the EU because decisions and problems are looked at from a national perspective. When you sit in Madrid or you sit in Helsinki, you tend to view things very differently simply because you are looking at your own national set of problems. And that, of course, is understandable. But that means that the urgency of achieving that scale simply isn't there. You have to give something away in order to be able to achieve that scale at the European level, and we are simply not there. It's not just the politics that is not there. I'm not even convinced that the citizens are there, because I think if the citizens were there, the politics would follow and reflect that in some sense.
The major challenge is also dictated by the fact that all what is happening around us make a lot of fears already when you are in a transition from an old economic model to a new one. A lot of part of society, workers, region, sector of enterprise are feared by the change because they are not sure what they are losing. They feel that where they are is not enough, but the other is not clear. On this, of course, the disruption of war. And also we have to say, we know already that there's also many external forces that are trying to make more division, to amplify the fears internally, because they want the disruption of Europe. They work for this. They work for the chaos. There are political parties in Europe that are still dreaming without calling a break the exit strategy, but they are still thinking that it's better to have less Europe than have more Europe. But if you don't recognize that today, even the biggest country and the biggest national economic champion are very, very small one in the world landscape. And so we have the opportunity to be still the second largest internal market in the world, the second largest economy in the world, and with a lot of dynamism, creativity, and capacity also to link it to our diversity. If you think this is an asset, and this asset can create added value for us and for building peace in Europe and around us, only if we are more united, more strong, and more invested to the future, so the result is already under our eyes. Of course, it's a fight. I want to be on the side of the womb that work for an agenda of hope and future, but the fight will be not easy because we have to leave the old system, the old rules, the old good thinking that it's better to stay where we were, or we dream to that it's possible to come back where we were, than to move with courage and passion and vision towards the future that is already happening. The future is there, it's coming. This world is changing in some way that we are not liking, as the war, disruption of the internal order, as the denying of the rule of law and of the force of the law. We are replacing the force of the law with the law of the force, but we have to adapt and to face with the European capacity. And I am convinced that Europe has the force, the imagination, and also the instrument to do this, as we have demonstrated in these 5 years after the pandemic and the war in Ukraine.
Lucas Jaillet from the EESC ends our discussion on the hard choices facing Europe as it adapts its economy to the 21st century. Thanks also to Margarita Marques from the European Parliament, Maria de Mertzis from Bruegel, and Maria Tadeo, a European correspondent. I was your host, Sandra Kaduri, and we look forward to seeing you on the next edition of The Grassroots View.